From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris, and it's time once again for All Tech Considered. Memorial Day is just 3 weeks away, and that means the unofficial start of the summer travel season. And in this down economy, the deals are piling up. We're joined, as we are most Mondays, by Omar Gayaga to talk about how technology can help you plan a smarter and a cheaper summer trip, and above all, a trip that is memorable. Welcome, Omar.
Great to be here.
Now, many of us already book our plane tickets online. We use the web to track down hotel reviews, find good deals on car rentals. But it sounds like we're taking things a step or two further today.
Right. Well, you know, the tools that we carry around with us every day, our cell phones and our laptops, have become incredibly powerful for any serious traveler, whether it's cell phone apps, useful podcasts you can load into your MP3 player, or just websites to help you plan your trip. There's never been more tools available for anyone who's a frequent flyer or driver.
Since you mentioned frequent flyers, I guess let's start at the airport. Several airlines are test driving technology that allows you to check in with your phone. No more waiting in line. You wouldn't even have to use one of those little self-check-in kiosks. And we sent NPR's Joshua Brockman to the airport to learn more about this.
It's a sound that's all too familiar in airports. At Reagan National Airport in Virginia, Mark Schalls checks in at one of Delta's electronic kiosks, a Bluetooth headset in his ear, and a BlackBerry in his hand. After swiping his credit card and making his selections on the touchscreen, the kiosk prints out his boarding pass.
Usually what I do is I just have my ticket number emailed to me on my BlackBerry, and then I use that instead of carrying a ticket. I just use that for all my information, and then I use the kiosk then to go ahead and plug that information in.
What if you could do all of that just from your cell phone without the kiosk?
Oh, it would be very nice. A lot more convenient.
Cell phones and smartphones are fast becoming the new frontier for everything from booking air travel to checking in. Airlines, including American, Delta, and Continental, are testing this technology at more than a dozen U.S. airports, and a number of foreign carriers have already implemented it.
What we do is we facilitate the ability for a passenger to check in on their phone just as they would check in on the airline's regular website.
Rob Barucki is an executive with NCR, a Dayton, Ohio-based technology company. It's working with the airlines and the TSA to further integrate mobile phones into the travel experience.
And then the final result is on their mobile browser, they'll see a boarding pass with a square, what we call a 2D barcode. It's a little barcode that can be read at the gates for when the passenger boards.
Greg Brockway is CEO of TripIt.com, a company that gives people mobile access to their itineraries. He's been trying out this technology on his iPhone.
My experience has been so far that while the idea is great, there's still a few kinks to work out in the system.
Travelers, of course, remain diehard users of their cell phones for another important airport ritual, venting frustrations.
What a screwed up flight this was.
But the airport experience could become even more aggravating as the airlines outsource more work to the traveler, airline consultant Robert Mann Jr.
The airlines are essentially expecting customers to bring their own technology to the process, whether it be a PC, a PDA, or a mobile phone.
Analysts and road warriors see mobile phones as a complement, not a replacement, for websites and kiosks that facilitate self-service. Rob Barucki of NCR.
It will become almost like a pocket travel agent or pocket travel assistant.
But regardless of how fast or how smart your phone is, there's still no guarantee that you'll whisk through security. Joshua Brockman, NPR News.
So, Omar, we have yet another story about how advanced cell phones and smartphones are introducing all kinds of new conveniences into our lives. But when it comes to travel, what else can these handheld devices do for us?
Well, you've seen the commercials that there's an app for that. Well, if you have a smartphone like an iPhone or a BlackBerry or a T-Mobile's G1 or any other phone that can easily access applications, there is a whole world of travel tools. Last night I checked in on the iTunes App Store and found 106 pages worth of just travel apps. Everything from tools to check your itinerary and flight delays to the AAA app, which allows you to check 160,000 locations in the U.S. and Canada that offer discounts to AAA members.
So I guess this means no more paper maps or AAA triptychs or those book-sized travel guides. I must say, though, I enjoy pulling maps open and poring over them and carrying around those rough guides.
Well, there's definitely not a screen big enough to fit the big map like that. But this is more supplementary. I mean, say most people are familiar with the travel guides from Lonely Planet. Well, they just released their first city guide application for the city of Paris, and it costs $15.99. They've also got a really good body of mobile phone apps, electronic phrase books, audio and video podcasts that you can really load up and just carry with you, have a lot of stuff on hand.
So when you mention the city guides, I guess it's really wonderful if you're doing walking tours, for instance. You have all that information right there in the palm of your hand.
Right. I mean, like if you're familiar with you know, going to the museum and getting a walking tour, think of that for an entire city. There's lots of that available on iTunes and any other place that has travel podcasts.
So since we're at the cusp of the summer travel season, what kind of site should we be heading toward if we're planning summer travel?
Well, lest you think you need a BlackBerry or an iPod Touch to get the most out of technology, there's still lots of good old-fashioned websites with really good information for you that you might not have heard of. I actually consulted a travel writer friend of mine, Sheila Scarborough, who suggests an alternative to, say, Expedia, Travelocity, and Orbitz, the ones we're most familiar with. Kayak.com, she tells me, it gives you a direct conduit to the airlines themselves. So if you book through them, you're actually booking through the airlines. You're not going through an intermediary. So if you have a problem with a cancellation or a flight change, you're not having to go through a Travelocity or Expedia. You go directly to the airlines instead of going through a separate company. She also suggests GoToday.com, which has really good deals on combo packages at rock-bottom prices. And, you know, given the economy, a lot of budget travelers, like, say, me, wouldn't think you'd have access to luxury accommodations. But right now, because so much of the travel industry is aiming at that low end, you might actually find really good deals on, say, you know, a Four Seasons where you might have paid for a Days Inn a few years ago. But if you do have a smartphone, one thing I can definitely recommend is get a good bathroom locator. There's an app called Sit or Squat that is available for iPhone and BlackBerry. You don't know when you're going to need it most, so definitely have it on hand.
You have got to be kidding me. Sit or Squat.
You've never been in a strange city looking for a bathroom?
You know, everyone has, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised that they've come up with something, even for that.
You got your GPS with you and the locator, and yeah, I mean, it's right there in your hand.
Thank you, Omar.
Thanks very much for having me. And we actually are going to be linking to the websites we talked about, as well as a lot of stuff we didn't have time to discuss, things like sending paper postcards via the web, finding really good quick attractions on the road. We're going to be posting those on the newly designed All Tech Considered blog at npr.org/alltech.
Newly designed. Be sure to check
Relaunched.
It out. Thank you, Omar.
Thanks for having me.
That's Omar Gayaga. He covers technology culture for the Austin American Statesman. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The U.S. electricity grid is about to undergo some big changes. Billions of dollars will be spent in the near future upgrading the grid to allow for higher demand and more forms of renewable energy. All this week, NPR is looking closely at the grid, and today we focus on utilities. While some proponents for changing the grid can be almost breathless in their enthusiasm, utilities are a more conservative lot, as NPR's Jeff Brady reports.
Just turn on your TV, and amid all those beer and pharmaceutical ads, you'll find enticing commercials about the future of the U.S. electricity grid.
Imagine plugging in your pickup truck and driving all over hell's half acres on clean energy made right here in America. Boys in Tehran might not like it.
This is from Al Gore's group, the Alliance for Climate Protection. For a dream world such as this to happen, it'll require a huge investment. In fact, you can't find a specific estimate for how much it'll cost. The stimulus legislation passed in February includes $11 billion to upgrade the country's electricity grid, but that's just a down payment. Utilities and their ratepayers will foot much of the bill for thousands of miles of new power lines and millions of updated meters. So utilities tend to paint a more sober view of the future.
The most abundant energy source in America is coal. But it'll take more than coal to power the future. At Southern Company, we're funding energy efficiency programs.
The folks who work at utilities tend to be practical people with one big important job, to keep the lights on. They're good at it, too. The U.S. grid is 99.97% reliable, so they can get a little defensive when an outsider comes along and suggests a major overhaul of their business. Martha Duggan is quite familiar with the utility culture. Before working at solar company Sun Edison, she was immersed in it. Duggan says an engineer once confided that his job was either to get ignored or criticized.
I get ignored when the lights come on, and I get criticized when they don't come on. And so his goal really was to be ignored. And as you might imagine, the opportunity for creativity or new ideas is not necessarily in top of mind for folks who work in that environment.
Duggan says there are a few exceptions around the country. She points to Xcel Energy, which is in the process of creating the first smart grid for an entire city in Boulder, Colorado. Just recently, Florida Power and Light launched a $200 million upgrade to the electricity grid in Miami-Dade County. But for most of the other utilities, we're left with an impression of big, stodgy companies that are resistant to change.
Well, absolutely. I think that's a total misperception.
David Ratcliffe is CEO of the Southern Company. Based in Atlanta, it has customers in Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida.
We've deployed a million new automated meters, and we'll move to 4.5 million. We've deployed automated switching on our transmission and distribution networks.
And his company is spending hundreds of millions of dollars researching new technologies. But take something like those automated or smart meters Ratcliffe was talking about. It's not as simple as just ripping out the old ones and installing new ones, then charging the customer a little extra to cover the cost. Utilities, by and large, are still regulated monopolies. Ahmed Farouki is an economist with the consulting firm The Brattle Group.
There are all kinds of regulatory financing issues here. The utilities are concerned that they will not be able to collect all the money. They still have the previous meters that are fully functioning, that are not fully amortized.
The finer points of regulation don't tend to make it into those breathless advertisements about the brave new world for the U.S. electricity grid. And really, in the end, David Ratcliffe's job as a utility CEO still is to keep the lights on.
It doesn't have the same kind of sex appeal as new technologies and new sort of golly gee whiz, whether it's a new computer software program or a new computer itself.
So don't expect this smart grid to be unveiled like the latest iPod. Utilities will build out this updated grid methodically, as befits their conservative nature. But Ratcliffe says change is underway, and there's a new generation of utility executives coming up through the ranks who tend to be more comfortable with change and the new technologies that will remake the country's electricity grid. Jeff Brady, NPR News.
You can see some plans for expanding the electricity grid at our website. And we've got an interactive map, plus other resources, at npr.org/grid.